I'm fired up. It's Friday, and it's a little later than we'd normally get it out there, but we have a great guest set up for you. Mike Miller and lottery pick, first round pick, certainly, RJ Hampton, who went to play for New Zealand. Instead of going to college, he was one of the top recruits out of high school, and he's an interesting story, and Mike's been training him, and they've been together now for a while, so we're going to have them both on at the exact same time. I'm hot and fired up about, well, I'm not talking about my attractiveness, because really it's probably more about my personality at this stage, but I'm upset about something, but also really fired up about a different topic. And then we have a pretty heavy life advice I almost thought of when Kyle sent me an email, just passing on the entire thing. And let's just check in before we read the ads. Let's just check in with Kyle. I listen to other big podcasts, and I don't love it when the huge name checks in with somebody who I don't know. But people are such Kyle fans that we'd like to know where your head's at on a Friday, because you definitely seemed a little sleepy earlier today.
Oh, when you call me at 8 a.m.? Well, yeah. I mean, who's not sleepy after the election? I don't know why I keep staying up waiting. Looking, but other than that, I'm great. I'm doing well. It's a nice day in LA. Thanks for checking.
You're an American who wants to know what's going on. All right, so let's get to it. Oh, I have another reason, which I'll share why I'm excited too. So let's do this. Okay, today's episode of the Ryan Russillo podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by State Farm. Getting great car and home insurance from State Farm at a surprisingly great rate. That's like drafting a player that becomes an all-pro, the real deal. State Farm agents provide personalized service so you can customize your insurance to fit your needs, like a GM putting together their very own roster. You need a team that supports you, and State Farm's got a great one. In addition to agents, the award-winning mobile app helps manage coverage, pay bills, file claims, and more with a great price and even greater service. State Farm goes from strength to strength. Choose insurance that always brings its A-game. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. Before I get to this Tua topic that is out of control, I'm going to spend a couple minutes on it. I'm not going to go too long on it. I have to share something else with you. Now, just got done with a back workout, so I'm a little juiced up right now. Not quite sure what's going on. All natural, but just, you know, physically juiced up. And the biggest reason why was because I was listening to Busta Rhymes' new one that came out earlier this month. And for those that don't know, Busta Rhymes, who no one's going to say he's a top five MC, but when he's good, he's really good. So Extinction Level Event 2 is out, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Like, couldn't have been more fired up. There's a bunch of dudes on it. Czar is probably my favorite track right now, so I got really excited working out after that. Speaking of activities, there's an area where I could get shots up still. I'm not going to share it with anybody because I don't want everybody going out there and having the rims taken off like every other court that you try to find. You know, I still like to get shots up. And so your boy biked over to this place and saw a bunch of dudes playing half court on their end. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm just going to play half court on my end. Just shoot around. Just get shots up, man. Beautiful day. Whatever's going on in your earbuds at that moment. And I didn't want to play half court with COVID and everything. You know, maybe if it were full court, I don't know if COVID's like, hey, full court's fine. Half court isn't, you know, again, I'm not pretending to know, but I just wasn't down with playing any half court, and no one was asking me either, which is fine too. And at this stage, white guy, 40s, shaved head, you know, you don't get picked a lot. So that's fine. That's fine too. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter about your shoes or calves or any of that kind of stuff. It's just their assumptions made about you and your ability to play. Now, these guys stunk. Bunch of out of shape dudes. I mean, out of shape, like in a way where it's like, oh, you're the out of shape guy that thinks it because you chuck it from 30 feet, like you can ball a little bit. Not the case. And they weren't very good. And as I looked, there was like litter everywhere. And I went, all right, cool. Whatever. I'm not going to say anything. Littering, I think, is just one of the most inexcusable things. Sometimes I have a harder time with people that are just litterers than, you know, people that may just be jerks personality wise. Yeah. Cause I don't get it. Like maybe there's some weird thing you get out of being a jerk to other people where I could kind of get to the root cause of it, but to decide I'm just going to leave garbage everywhere and have zero respect for stuff around me. Like it bothers me. It bothers me a lot. I think if you litter, you suck. If you litter, unfollow us, stop listening to the podcast. You don't deserve it. So there was no animosity or anything like that. They weren't asking me to play. I didn't want to play with them. And as they were leaving, no one was talking to each other. And one of the guys had a pit bull. And, you know, whatever, the pit bull ran over to me. It was friendly. It was not like an issue with the pit bull or anything like that. And they got in their cars and I thought like, all right, cool. They were playing on the better end of the court. I'm going to go down there. So as I go to dribble down and play at that end, there's dog shit piled up all over the place. So what they did is when they were done playing, they let their dog take a giant shit all over that end of the court. It was trailing from like the elbow to like 30 feet out. Didn't clean it up, got in their cars and fucking left. And I was so mad. I was so mad about it because, and I'm actually probably happy. I'm probably lucky that I didn't notice it because then I would have said something. I wasn't going to say anything about the littering. I'm just going to sit there and be like, fine, you guys want to be just, you know, shitheads about this. Go ahead. But they thought it was funny, I guess. And all I could think of is like to be in that moment, to have that little respect for this one court that's still open and the next people that want to play. Like what if I brought my dog by as you guys are tying your sneakers and I just let him go all over your end of the court and then left? Would it be cool? Would you guys not have a problem with it? Of course, you'd be furious. And so to do something like that when you would hate it if it were done to you because you're just like, ah, whatever, let the dog go. We're done running fives anyway because you're so out of shape, half court fives. Fucking losers. sorry, I'm swearing more than I normally do. But it sent me to a tailspin, Kyle, for about a day.
I love this. This isn't even the open, dude. This is incredible.
No, it isn't. It isn't the open. And part of it, I'm like, okay, you can chill out now. And 10 on one, I probably don't like my chances with any, you know, I don't know, maybe some country. I don't want to know. 10 on one be tough.
Was it 5-on-5 half court?
These 5-on-5 half court. Right. That's how out of shape they were. But you know what they were doing. Like, hey, that dude's playing and our end of the court is much better. Or even if it wasn't even about me, it was just, now that we're done, this is how little we care about anyone else. And I'm just telling you, if you're of that mindset, like if I can't imagine, because there's always one guy, there's always a small percentage. You'd be like, well, you know, if the dog has to go, you know, you just go, no. If the dog has to go, you don't go in a basketball court. And if it happens because it's an accident or it's a puppy, you clean it up. No further questions at this time. I have nothing else to offer on this topic. I had to share it with you guys. Okay, let's talk to Tungavailoa. This story is dumb. All right. So here's what we have right now. We have a story going around. Now, I don't blame Schefter for this. Adam Schefter had a story basically said they're playing Tua in Miami. One of the reasons, not the only reason, one of the reasons that they're playing Tua, and these are Schefter's words, is that, quote, they want to see what they have, okay? And Brian Flores is coming out. I'm going to go ahead and get the quote. Again, know what they have ahead of the 2021 NFL draft because they have the Texans pick. And right now, the Texans, if you look at it, I believe it's the fourth worst record statistically in the NFL. I'm just going to double check that. And we know what everybody's looking at with this draft. It's not even just Trevor Lawrence, who may be the best prospect we've seen in 10 years, Andrew Luck. I think Justin Fields is that special. He's unbelievable. If you watch that Penn State game, if you didn't get a chance to see it, dude, he's closer to Lawrence than I think he's getting credit for. I really do. And that's how special I think Lawrence is that special. Yeah, don't take my word for it. Take a guy like Todd McShay, who does this for a living, who told me, he goes, I don't really get very excited about high school guys ever, phrasing, but because this Trevor Lawrence who's going to Clemson, you won't believe how amazing this guy is. Okay, so guys were on it early. The Texans, yes. So you get the Jets 0-8, Giants 1-7, Jags and Texans both at 1-6. So you could have a scenario here where you end up with the number one overall pick or the number two pick. So if your evaluation of Tua was good enough, by the way, to take him fifth, and Tua may have gone number one overall if he hadn't broken his hip. I think there's a real chance Tua goes number one overall. As great as Burrow's statistical season was, I mean, Tua was more on the radar, and I think people liked his arm strength. Well, his arm strength was just better than Burrow's. I mean, there's no debate on that one. So Tua still goes fifth despite being hurt, but now that he's playing and playing for Ryan Fitzpatrick, part of the story Schefter puts out there is it almost like this audition. Now, Flores shot that down, and Flores has to shoot it down because that's the job. Much like what I've gone through this week where I hit the aggregator triple crown on different stuff. And I'll just share this with anybody that gets upset about this. I'm telling you right now, almost none of us ever make anything up. I don't. I know for a fact I've never gone, hey, I'm just going to make up something and say it. And what happens is it turns into clicks. Oh, you guys do that for clicks. I can guarantee you this. Adam Schefter at no point was like, things have been a little slow. What could I do for clicks? I know, Tua. Somebody clearly told him this. But one of the great things about having access to information is that you have it. The bad thing is that you can, and I've made this mistake when I was younger, where you think, hey, somebody who is in the know, somebody who does this for a living, who has a front office job or as a coach or as an agent told me this thing. So now that I've been, you know, I'm allowed to share it, because there's plenty of stuff that you're not allowed to share. Let me share this interesting thing. But just because you got it, it doesn't mean that it's right. So if that's the reason, it isn't, though. It's of all the reasons you would play Tua, to evaluate him, to then figure out if you want to take another quarterback high, it's the least important, because here's the overriding factor in all this. Tua was going to play this year anyway. Did anybody think Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to go from end to end week one to week 17? No, because he's never really done that other than he had the Miami year last year where it looked like he was tanking. He had years ago, like 8 years ago in Buffalo, he went back-to-back seasons where he was the main guy. But he's, what, 37, 38 years old, and you took Tua fifth? So are you telling me if the Dolphins didn't have the Texans pick, because the Dolphins actually have a decent record right now, if the Dolphins didn't have the Texans pick and took Tua, would Tua not play this year? Well, that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, would anybody go, well, I could see him sitting behind for the entire year. I went through the last 10 drafts, okay? And I'm not even counting Burrow and Herbert yet, because they have been Burrow day one starters. Herbert essentially day one starters because of the odd Tyrod Taylor injury with the injection, which is super unfortunate for him, but it's pretty clear Herbert's already better than Tyrod Taylor. But if you go through it, as I did, it's of all of the first round quarterbacks taken from 2010 through 2019, that's 29 quarterbacks in the first round, a total of 320 starts in their rookie season, an average of just over 11 starts per quarterback, per first round quarterback in their rookie season. 11 starts. The only guys that don't, ironically, Mahomes and Jake Locker and Manziel are low. Mahomes had the one start, which is whenever you hear a guy say, well, you know, Mahomes sat a year and look how good he is. You want to know why Mahomes is so good? Because he's Pat Mahomes, because he's that good. Has nothing to do with sitting behind. Would it have taken a little bit longer, maybe, or would he have had some bumps in that rookie year? Did he get to learn and watch? All right, fine, all those different things. The end product is probably the same if Mahomes plays week seven of his rookie year versus getting that one start at the very end. Manziel, I don't think it mattered where he was going. It didn't look like he was super prepped to be a pro quarterback. All right? I don't know that he had the right approach, that rise and grind mentality you need. He had two starts. Jake Locker had zero in that 2011 draft. And that 11 number is trending up because of what Burrow and Herbert have done. So if you're telling me that there's a part of the Dolphins front office and coaching staff that goes, hey, you know, we have to know what we have in Tua. Okay. And we have to make sure we really are happy with him, because we could have this Texas pick that could get us either Lawrence or Fields. Okay. But are you telling me without that Texans pick or a different quarterback that was starting in front of Tua, that Tua was never going to play this year as the fifth pick? Of course he was going to play. Of course he was going to play. And that's one of those breakdowns where it sounds kind of smart. It's kind of interesting. You're like, oh, wow, okay, that makes sense. Like, what's going on here? But it's clearly the least important aspect of the decision to wanting to see your top five pick actually play during his rookie season. And it reminds me of something which is connected, not directly to, but it's connected because it's one of those stories that I remember drove me nuts, was the Trevor Lawrence story with Clemson. Kelly Bryant's a starter, Trevor Lawrence steps in. And then people said what? And a lot of people said this, former players, analysts, college football people, and they said, okay, Dabo's doing this because he knows he needs Trevor Lawrence to beat Alabama. I'm like, wait, what? Say that sentence again out loud, and I'm going to do it for you right now. Dabo's playing Trevor Lawrence over Kelly Bryant because he needs a guy like Trevor Lawrence because Bama's going to be waiting for him at the end of the year. So what you're saying is Dabo, in a non-Alabama threat season, would have played the inferior quarterback on purpose? Do you realize how insane that is? Because first of all, let's just start. It's wrong. He played Trevor Lawrence because he's better than Kelly Bryant, as we've seen, okay? He played the better guy. That's it. Now, are there certain times where it's a senior and it's the freshman, like Fields probably should have played at Georgia? I'm sure Georgia fans don't want to hear that. And as you watch Fields take off, you're like, dude, maybe you find a way to keep that guy happy because we saw that video of him leaving when Fromm was still in the game and Fields came in a couple plays. They won. Somebody said to Fields, like, hey, nice game. And he's like, whatever. He's like, all I did was hand it off. And so I don't want to beat up on Georgia too much because I think even with Jalen Hurts and Tua, when they were both there, and then Jalen Hurts gets benched for Tua in the title game, Saban is very big on the locker room and the presence. That's why Sims started over Coker when Coker transferred over from Florida State. So there's more to these decisions than just the one guy is better. But the Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence gap was massive. And Dabo was probably trying to give Kelly the chance and see how it went. And it wasn't going to be enough. But I can't imagine Dabo going, you know what? Let me play the guy that's not going to be the number one pick in a couple years just because. Let's be worse. Like, we could be awesome, but let's just be worse. And that was that whole analysis of, well, the only reason they're playing Trevor is because they have to worry about Alabama. So as you say that out loud, that means you actually believe the head coach would go, well, imagine how good this offense could be if we're playing the other guy. But yeah, let's not do that. Let's do that next year. We'll do that next year instead. And then Kelly Bryant bounced. And, you know, that's his move. So the Tua thing is already off to a really, really weird start. Yes, they want to see him, but there's almost a certainty, okay, a certainty Tua was playing this year, even if they didn't have the Texans pick. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. Okay, this is really cool. A cool opportunity here. I was talking with one of my buddies this week. He goes, hey, look, do you want RJ Hampton on? I was like, absolutely. The guy's going in the first round. We know potentially lottery as well. And then Mike Miller, NBA legend, and vet who's actually working RJ out. So we have them both here at the same time. So RJ, let's start with you. We know the skill set. We know your story. And it's different. So I think some people at first were like, how come this guy's not going to Duke? How come he's going to New Zealand? I watched those games. It's a great league. So what was that experience like for you deciding to go in a different path, getting you ready for what's a dream to be drafted coming up in a week?
Right. I think you hit it on the nail when you say getting me ready. The biggest thing for me was wanting to be, you know, as ready as possible coming into the draft and coming into the season in my rookie year. So I definitely thought the New Zealand, the NBL, with those guys, those players, could definitely get me, you know, ready as fast as possible.
What was the most surprising part of it for you?
I would just say how good everybody was in the league. I mean, the guards in the league were great. I mean, you have, you know, guys that have floated in and out the NBA, you know, played in EuroLeague. So those guys are really good.
Now, Mike, when you get RJ, and I don't know how long this started. Give us your timeline. You getting RJ in the gym in those first days of working out.
Well, the timeline is that I've known him since he was a sophomore in high school, and I recruited him when I was coaching at University of Memphis, and just loved everything about his game. And you know, to give credit to RJ and the maturity of him, what he said, being ready, being a professional, and being a professional at an early age. We reached out to each other. He kind of reached out to me about, you know, getting ready for the NBA draft, getting his jump shot to where he wanted it. You know, not many young kids identify what they need to get, you know, you're better at, especially kids that are, you know, top 10 picks. So he's been willing to change. We reached out to each other. Now we've been in the gym now for about 3 or 4 months, and it's been a significant change. He's gotten way better. It's just been fun to watch his progress.
I think RJ's like, if I don't know if you're the best athlete in the draft. You might be the best athlete in the draft. I mean, just movement alone and all this stuff. I think Anthony Edwards is in the conversation as well. But when a scout or a GM says, hey, RJ's the best athlete in the draft, I'm not going to tell them they're wrong. That's how special I think you are. Mike, on your end of that, when you're taking somebody who's maybe athlete first, and I know his playmaking ability and all the stuff that I saw back in high school, but what's the first thing you do when you have like a to-do, a checklist for him as a player?
Well, obviously, you don't get in the way of those things, right? So he checks every box and was an elite scorer. Again, I've worked with a ton of NBA basketball players, young rookies that come in the league. When you play 17 years in the league and you know, people put you in a category of being a pretty good shooter, a lot of times young kids want to work with you. For him is identifying that and getting to work early on that was so important for him. I think that's what separates and shows his maturity level is most of the times when I work with young kids on their jump shot, it was when it was almost too late. And he's getting out in front of it. So the stuff that he's been able to do, if you watched his games against Memphis or even OKC when he played for New Zealand, you couldn't keep him out of the paint. I think he is the best athlete in this draft. When you talk about size and speed and just getting – obviously Anthony Edwards is an elite athlete, but when he doesn't have the speed RJ has. But when you start doing that and now you slow it down to become a jump shooter and you can play off your jump shot, I think it's just going to be night and day for him. And so, you know, that was the one thing that we had to work on. I didn't want to work on anything with his ball handling. It's super tight. He's learning how to play in pick and rolls, which is going to be great. But just playing off that jump shot, minimalizing his jump shot, making it to where he can be more and more consistent on his jump shot. And so if you talk to him now and you see him now, his base is way better. There's less movement in the ball, which allows him to be more consistent on his jump shot. And now if he can play off a jump shot, and I believe in 2 to 3 years will be a high 30s to low 40% three-point shooter, it's game, set, match. So he's identified that, and he's gotten to work.
RJ, I remember watching Get Up. You know, I used to be on that show and be in that studio, and you roll out there in the tux. You got the family, and you're making the announcement. Right. You're going to New Zealand. How close was it? Was there a ever a day where you're like, no? I mean, was Duke the school, if you were going to go to college, was it actually going to be Duke?
Duke wasn't in my they weren't in my top four. My top four was Kansas, Kentucky, Memphis, and Tech.
Where were you gonna go then? If you didn't go to Memphis?
Back then I would have went to Kansas, but now I would have went to Memphis.
Memphis? He lied to you, Ryan. He lies, man. Oh, hey Ryan, that's why I don't have a job no more. I couldn't even get RJ.
Man, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him.
We'll ask you about James Wiseman later then if you guys want to do that. RJ, you know, maybe it was that Duke fans were the most mad. I mean, that was the thing that always drives me. Like, there's nothing more.
They were mad.
Yeah.
Memphis, like, gave me a lot of love. Like, when I went to go overseas, Memphis, they gave me a lot of love. I didn't get too much love from Kansas or Duke. Kentucky really didn't care. They had a bunch of people coming in.
That's a first. Because
he was going to Memphis, man. He lied to you.
All right. I'm going to put that in the headline then. RJ turns down Memphis, joins us on the show. You know, look, I get a little bit older and I get a little softer, and I never want to give a kid a hard time because I know what I was like as a kid, and I wasn't asked to do any shit nearly as important as what you're going through, right? And so when I see adults rip a kid for not going to their school, it's like the fastest track to that guy's a loser. And I saw the hate. So I think there might have been more Duke hate reaction.
Yeah,
and that's why I keep thinking back to Duke. But here's what I love about the challenge that you put yourself through is because you could have gone, like when I watched Cole Anthony at UNC, like the whole thing was built around him and he put up 18 a game, and we'll see what happens with him in the draft. But you go from dictating every possession while you were in high school, running up and down, making all these decisions, flying through kids, trying to guard you. And then you get to New Zealand and you were asked immediately almost to accept a rotation role where it wasn't about you. How tough was that?
I think it was definitely tough, just the mindset of always being the guy, always being the person that has to do everything. But I definitely feel like once my teammates kind of talked to me, once my coaching staff talked to me, and I learned the adjustment of how to play with other great guys, because, you know, in high school, I mean, you can play with, you know, a couple, three, four stars, but I was the only five star I ever played with. So learning how to play with, you know, professionals and other great guys, I kind of embraced it towards, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh game of the season. I'm like, man, this is what's going to be like in the NBA. It's not going to be me and a bunch of losers in the NBA. I mean, there's an NBA caliber player. So I think that got me ready for sure.
Do you know,
Ryan,
how good...
Ryan, can I jump in on that?
Absolutely. Quick? Take it wherever you need to go, Mike.
I think the biggest thing for him on that, what people got to understand, is he was projected to be a top five pick. I think he's better than that now, right, going to leave. And the easy way would have been going to college. And high school coaches and college coaches, for the most part, are a tribute to a lot of the kids' early struggles in the NBA to me. Because what you just said, Ryan, I think it was spot on, is listen, when you're in high school, he was at Little Elm averaging 38, 40 a game, winning state championships. But as a high school coach, if you want to win games, you give him the ball and get out of the way. And he learns how to be – he's just that good. In college, we have a job to get him to the league, and he's our best player. You let them play. They're never told no. And so he goes to a physical league in New Zealand where he's told to go sit in a corner when he's one of the best athletes in the world. So he's playing physically. He's 18 years old. He's doing something that he's been told no. Like, I think whoever passes up on him in this draft is going to really regret it, because I think him going over there, definitely people haven't seen him in a while, and it's hurt his draft stock a little bit. But he's still, I think he's better than the top five draft prospect right now. And he's further along than the rest of them, because when he gets there, he'll be able to, like you said, accept a role, understand that he could, in New Zealand, he only played 16 to 18 minutes every once in a while. So, like, those things are so important for the growth of a kid going into the pros. So he's still that, he's better than he was when he was a top five prospect before he left New Zealand, and now he's better. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this next year plays out. I'm excited to see it.
The draft process is, I mean, you guys look at the mocks. You can pretend you don't. And as you say, you think, Mike, he's a top five, and then his stock has taken a hit. And it's really important to point out, too, like, if people haven't watched him play, and it's not always easy. I'm lucky enough to have some programs where I can watch the full games. Mm-hmm. And it's important to point out, like, I'm glad you brought up the minutes thing, because somebody will look like 8 points a game. Like, what happened? And you'll be like, no, like, that was an older team, and you weren't given the keys the way LaMelo was.
Right.
And I will get to that a little bit later. But how do you react when you see yourself late lottery, maybe outside of the lottery, going up into this?
I think at the beginning when I kind of started to see it, like kind of started to see my draft stock fall, I was kind of mad about it. But ever since I've gotten with Mike and we've been, you know, training, we've been doing so much stuff, like he's given me so many different jewels. Like I feel like it's kind of a blessing in disguise, honestly. You know, to be able to, you know, see teams pass up on me or see, you know, where I think I should go and then where I do go. And then in my first year, kind of prove everybody wrong. You know, I definitely feel like Mike said, I feel like I'm still that same kid that was, you know, a top five recruit, top five draft prospect straight out of high school. So I think I'm more grateful for the position than anything right now, because, you know, I get to showcase what people don't think I can do anymore.
Did you get pissed seeing LaMelo get to take 30 footers 20 times a game and then you had to come off the bench?
I really didn't. Honestly, though, I really didn't. But I mean, he got a lot of shots. He got to do a lot, and which is credit to him, because he's a great player. But at the same time, I think I could have done the same thing? Yeah.
Well, that look on your face just clinched. I don't care what you said. Hey, go ahead.
That just goes to show more credit to his maturity than anything is, you know, most kids don't understand, like, it's about fit and opportunity. So he's not looking at it as, listen, I believe and I know for a fact, I've worked out a ton of kids, of where he's at talent-wise. I think he's probably – there's three to four potential stars in this draft. RJ is one of them. But he also understands, like, where he's drafted is really big on his career, his development, the organization, and best fit. You know what I mean? I think it has a lot to do with it. And so he looks at it as a blessing to see where he's at. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because it's going to take some huge balls to have RJ's name on the draft boards and not take him.
RJ, did you know how good Mike was when he first started?
When I first started with him?
No, as a player, 20 years ago, he got drafted.
I wasn't even born 20 years
ago. Yeah, but I mean, you know, you do have the internet, right? I mean, do you know how good he was?
growing up, you see, I mean, growing up, you see him on the teams. Like, I think my first, like, remembrance of him was probably his Memphis days, because his Orlando days with T-Mac, I was like three, four
years old. Yeah, right. No, I'm not expecting you to, like, start, you know, breaking moves down on a Nerf hoop in the basement because Mike.
I knew how good he was.
Mike, does he, your career, though, is like a perfect example of, all right, you're this huge guy, you're this really good athlete, and then you have like one role, and then it's like, wait, is he not good enough? Because then Orlando gets like frustrated with you because they took you so high, which wasn't fair. And then you go to Memphis and turn into like a stud, and then it turns into everybody wants Mike Miller, but you, because I think probably because some of the back stuff too, like you kept evolving, you kept reinventing yourself the entire time. So how important is that for you when you're training guys, because every kid probably thinks of himself in one way, and it may be up to you to tell him you may be different.
Well, I think the biggest thing is who you are now is not who you have to be.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think that as a player, that's what you got to understand. At the end of the day, playing time is oxygen. So what you got to be able to do at a young age is to identify, how can I get on the floor? And as I get on the floor, now I can evolve. Like, For a perfect example, RJ going out there to look at and understanding where the game of basketball is going and what you have to do to be able to play in it, his size and speed and athleticism is not going anywhere for a long time. So how do I become the best basketball player I can become and get on the floor no matter what? What if I get drafted with a team that has a ton of athletes? I don't want to just be another one of the athletes. Now I'm one of those guys that's shooting high 30s from three. So the game, the way the game is going, you're looking at teams right now, they're playing three point guards at a time. Why? Because you can't keep me out of the paint. We shoot the ball well, and it's impossible to guard. The game has completely changed. When I came in 2000, you know, it was the first to 88, 90 points. Now it's the first to 110 to 115. So they're looking at guys completely different, and RJ's game is evolving with that. Can I be that athletic 6'5", 6'6", point guard who now you can't go under screens, who lives in the paint, who starts dominoes for everybody else, and at the same time, oh, yeah, I'm shooting 40 for three? Like, you won't be able to keep me out of paint, and I can play with other guards because the game has completely changed. When I came in, you were a position. You know what I mean? Like, you were a three. You were a two. You were a four. Now it's positionless. It's who can you guard? RJ Hampton can guard all the way up to a three. So now I can play him at the one. I can play him at the two, and I can play him at the three because he can guard those positions. So it's not like it used to be. You're not coming in and playing with 2 7-footers, and you're going to be the point guard, and you're bringing it up every time. If I can guard a four right now, you're a four, period.
How do you compare RJ to like a Halliburton who's projected to go ahead of him, or like maybe a Cole Anthony who, you know, big high school career. Mm-hmm. I would say Cole's probably not as hot now as he was before he went to UNC. UNC just had probably one of the worst years in 20 years that they've had there. How do you see your guy compared to guys that are either ahead or right there with them?
Both really good players. Don't take anything away from them. But they're totally different to me. Halliburton is strictly a point guard. Right, like Halliburton, because of his you know, basically his size of his body, and I'm concerned a little bit. I think he's worked on it a lot, but I'm concerned a little bit with his release points and the way he shoots the ball to be really, really good. But Halliburton and Cole Anthony's more of a combo guard but his size doesn't allow him to play one through three. Take example like what OKC did this year. They play Chris Paul, they play Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and they play Dennis Schroeder. Yeah. That was the number one scoring offense in the league. Why? Because the two guards and Chris Paul is just different, right? But those guys can guard one through three. RJ Hampton, out of those three guys, is the only one that can play one through three there and can play off the ball and on the ball. If RJ Hampton is your secondary playmaker, your secondary paint abuser, it's a wrap for defenses. And so I think that's what makes him unique. His athleticism can allow you to guard the one through three. His secondary playmaking, because of his size and athleticism, finishing at the rim is different. And he's going to be able to shoot the ball, I think, because of what I've seen, better than those guys in 2 to 3 years for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwiches done right can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. Now, on this Zoom call, I can see RJ's in a spot with no wall art, which I can respect. As you can see my setup here, it's just in and out. You know, if I live somewhere, I want to be able to get out real quick. I don't want to have to worry about taking stuff down off the walls. What is it? What is this? Now, look, you already got paid. So a lot of the guys that you're boys with from high school that went to school were like, man, right. I thought I was getting that paycheck in June. And now it's November. What's it been like waiting and having to go through something that's unlike any other draft class?
I mean, honestly, like going through the waiting process, like the first couple months, like probably like April, May, June, you're like super stressed. You're like, oh my gosh, like what's going on?
I can't imagine.
The months start going, like, and then they said like, okay, October 16th. And I was super excited for that day. And then they push it back a whole nother month. You get that same kind of like stressful, like as you're just anxious. But I think now, I mean, we're 11, 12 days away. I mean, it's a wrap now.
Now, you had mentioned how much you studied Luka and how much that influenced your decision. What did you see in his game, in his path, that led you to kind of go the way you went?
I think the biggest thing for me is, I mean, Luka came in the NBA. He didn't have a rookie curve. He didn't have a rookie ball. He didn't slow down. I mean, he had an injury, but I mean, that was it. You see Luka, what is it? This was his second year, all first team NBA. I mean, he just looked so much more polished, so much more ahead of the guys. Mentally, I mean, he's not the fastest. He's not the most athletic. He doesn't shoot the ball the best, but mentally, he was just so far ahead of those guys in his draft class. And I think, you know, you go over and play in New Zealand or Australia, NBL, you're going to get that. You're going to get ahead in certain ways. I mean, I was playing against Andrew Bogut 3 times this year. I mean, there's no other college player, even though Andrew Bogut is like a 15, 16-year vet. There's no college big that's as smart as Andrew Bogut, as big as Andrew Bogut, and that has the tricks and different things he has.
Now, did Bogut try to break your ribs with an illegal screen at any point?
He does set illegal screens.
He's the worst. I mean, he's great, actually. It's amazing. But
Oh, my God. Yeah, so I got hit by a screen my first game in the NBL, and I was like, ah, yeah, that
hurt. Did anyone – I don't even know how to answer this or how the answer would go, because I don't know if it's a guy from over there or an American guy that's down there. Who was the most disrespectful, thing to you? Because obviously they want to push you around a little bit mentally, not just physically, where your first intro was like, all right, these are men trying to give me a hard time.
Yeah, it was this guy he played for Southeastern Melbourne Phoenix. And I really don't even remember his name, but like every time I came off the screen, there was an elbow to the back. There was trips. There was pulling my jersey. And I was like, all right. But he was only like 6'2", 6'3", and he was kind of scrawny. So it wasn't like a really big guy, but, you know, it definitely hit him. I forgot his name, though.
Wow, that's the ultimate payback. You can't even remember his name.
Hey, Ryan, it's a good thing he's not coming to league with Cliff Robinson, Charles Oakley. Man, those guys used to tear me up.
They don't want to see me.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, look, shout out to Cliff, man. That's a guy that goes way back for those of us that watch UConn Hoops. Mike, who does RJ ask you about the most? Guys you played with?
Kobe. Kobe, he loves Kobe.
What do you guys talk about?
I mean, for all the kids that grew up in that era, Kobe is Kobe, it's LeBron, it's MJ, it's all. But he's got a passion for Kobe. I think a lot of it's just, you know, what it's like guarding the guy. I mean, it's not fun. It's an easy answer. I got cooked a lot. I got cooked a lot by Kobe.
Who wins right now between you and RJ?
Okay, no, hold on. Let me go first. I won the last game, but like they only film when he scores. They don't ever film when I score.
Hey, Ryan, bring your own film crew. That's the message for everyone. Bring your own film crew.
I'm gonna tell you,
Ryan, I have zero chance against him. But I set the rules. I get a little old school. 2 dribbles. You know what I mean? Make the guy play off his jump
back
shot.
Back to the basket. 2 dribbles. Only Mike can get fouled.
Oh, Mike, cool. where do you want to see RJ go?
To be honest with you, it's to me, there's whatever the fit to me needs to be, the development side of it, where he can play early. They put him in positions where his growth is good. I mean, I don't want to just name teams, to be honest with you.
No, that's cool. No, I get it. Because if you start naming right fits, but it's a later pick, then it sounds like you're not rooting for your guy to go higher.
So I think fit's important. I really do. I think for his development, again, the maturity is really, really there for him. You know, as hard as everybody wants to be, you know, the third pick or the fourth pick or the fifth pick in the draft, right? Like, that's what you shoot for. But that's one night. And so the longevity of it is the fit, where you're going to get playing time, real minutes, and you're not asked to do more than you have to that early. Like, I think he can carry a heavy load right now, but also that gets exhausting. And so development, where they're going to keep encouraging his growth, is the most important to me.
RJ, do you have – see, the thing is we all know it's bullshit, right? Like, some teams are telling you they love – no, they're telling you they love you, and they're not interested in you because they're hoping you say, oh, this team was really interested. Is there any team that you do feel like in this odd lead-up to it that you've connected with?
And to be honest, like, I feel like I have connected with teams, but like, it's so weird because I feel like I connected with all of them. Like, I'm a good person to talk to, or an easy person to talk to. So whenever I talk to teams – I feel like they love me, but then I go back and I'm like, do they really like me, or are they just?
That's the rest of his life, Ryan. You gotta get used to it.
Yeah, no, but yeah, look, RJ, you're an incredibly impressive kid, and I don't mean to say kid in a demeaning way. You're a young guy. You're smart as hell. We know you're not just the basketball resume, but we know the transcripts and all that kind of stuff. But what's the weirdest part of this? Because instead of going to Chicago or going to individual workouts and flying all over the place, like, what has this been like for you trying to get these workouts in, where I know the audience is limited, so most teams can't have even close to a full staff? I know it's a lot of Zoom interviews. So give me a story, or give me an example of like a day in your life trying to figure out how to meet up with one of these teams.
I think like for the past like probably like 3-4 months, like Mike or Dan, they'll hit me and say, you know, we got a Zoom call, and then like some Zooms will last like 30 minutes. I've had one that has been 2.5 hours. So it just depends on the team and, you know, if they are interested or just kind of trying to fill you out. And then like when teams come and, you know, they watch you work out, you know, how they started to be in the last couple of weeks or so. I think that's been good. I feel like it's not really a weird process, but I feel like it's a better process. You know, I'm shooting in my home gym. You know, I have the people around me, I feel like, that, you know, let me succeed and, you know, are rooting for me. So I definitely think it's a lot better than, you know, going around to the combine, different cities, that kind of stuff.
You hope,
Ryan,
that-
I'll say this, Ryan, like, I don't think it's the weirdest thing. I think the scariest thing about this is going into it, if you haven't done your homework or you weren't ahead of the curve on this, is this draft, not just with RJ, but this draft, you're going to miss on guys. And because before, like you said, they would bring 15, 16, 20 people into their workouts, maybe even more, 30 kids into the workouts, and now they have 10. And I think they're going to miss on a lot of guys, and they're going to use it as a crutch. Like before, it'd be a fireable offense. And so for me, I think if they didn't do their job, I think it's scary, because I know for a fact if RJ Hampton walked into the top 10 teams and went in their facility and they put him through an uncomfortable workout, he's prepared for that, and he'd win them over every time. And so now with the limited workouts they get and the access and the limited travel, I think people are going to miss, and it's scary for every kid, not just RJ, but scary for them. To me, it's a fireable offense if you don't know by now.
Yeah, RJ, I feel for you on this one, because I just know with your physical abilities and then to know just you're never out of shape that you would blow a lot of these teams away. Like workout wise, I think specific to you, this, like, I'm already hearing about some of these other guys that are out of shape. I can't believe you could already be out of shape when you had nothing to do but be in shape for the draft. That's not the case with you. And honestly, I feel like it's bad timing. Like, it's just bad luck. Like, look, maybe it works out on draft night and it goes better than you think, but it's specific to how you would work out in front of these teams. It's an advantage that you should have had. So
Ryan, think about this. They haven't seen him play in a long time and his development change. Like, if you saw his body change already, like just the size, he's gotten bigger, he's faster, he's more athletic. Like, you see it in person. Tape is one thing. You see it in person. If he'd have worked out for all 1 through 10, we wouldn't even be having these conversations.
So are you worried at all, RJ? Are you worried that you might fall?
I'm not worried, honestly. I don't think I'm worried at all. I think I would maybe worry in like in April or May, but nah, I don't think I'm worried about falling no more.
He's in the great spot. He's not falling nowhere.
Yeah, we're not falling.
Okay. Look, I'm just, you know, getting the full scope of the story here, Mike. You don't have to worry about it.
Why we beat you up, Ryan? Why am I beating you up?
No, man. I get it. But Mike, you know, it's funny because like I'll always check myself where I go. There's nothing more predictable than older people making fun of younger people and saying, like, oh, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. And it happens in my industry all the time where it's like, what? Like, are you serious? Like, that's what you think? And then I'll think maybe I was wrong. Maybe I should have handled it the way the younger guy handled it and wanting everything right away. How has this been for you going from young dude, lottery pick to vet to now not playing, but this next chapter of your life and understanding younger players? Like, what's the most, I would say that the moments that you've had, like, this shit's different now, but now this is what I'm doing.
I think the biggest thing is just having the patience with it and, you know, letting them know at the same time, they're going to have their own courses. Everyone's going to go down their own path. But, you know, when you're sitting in a locker room every year with a new draft pick, you being one of them at one point, right? And you see the mistakes, the constant mistakes. It's very rarely anything different. They either don't work, they don't listen, all right, they're not prepared, they don't have a set plan, they don't have a routine. Like you by year 8 or 9, I knew exactly what rookie was gonna make it after 4 months. And how
no
long
kidding.
His career was going to be. Yeah, because
you have an example? Do you have an example like one that did and one that didn't?
Well, I don't want to use guys' name because
give me a positive then. Give me a positive one. Where a rookie that maybe wasn't a top overall pick.
Kyle Lowry. Shit. He was a pit day one. He came over, got veteran guys, got an assistant coach that he felt comfortable with, started his routine, went to his routine every day. He worked. I knew he was going to be a stud. I just knew it because at the end of the day, you can't hide that. What they're the ones that because the hardest thing when you go from college to NBA or anything that you do is the time, right? Making sure you go out there and do it. So when you see kids that come in, gravitate to the older players, listen to the older players, get assistant coaches, and start a routine early. Hey, practice starts at noon. I'm gonna be there at 10:30 every day. I'm gonna lift my first 45 minutes. I'm gonna shoot this many shots. It gets boring. But the ones that fight through the boredom of it and set their routines, the stuff that me and RJ are talking about every day now is how we're going to prepare when we get to the next place. Those are the ones that ultimately make it in this guy and being all-stars in this league because you're always working to become better and you're taking care of your business. You're being professional. And those are the ones that you see.
RJ, now that Mike didn't say it, who are the guys that he says sucked early on? I'm just kidding. Let's finish with this. Let's finish with something fun. Have you let yourself, you know, Mike got to do it. Little kids like me would pretend, you know, in our backyard, shooting hoops and announcing ourselves being drafted. And I think we all did it and very few of us actually, but it's going to happen to you, man. It's going to happen in a very short amount of time. Have you allowed yourself to think about that just joy you're going to feel when it's official?
I ain't allowed myself to think about it yet.
Come on.
I'm still in work mode right now, but I think I've been thinking about when I'm going to allow myself to feel that way. So that's probably the draft on Wednesday, probably be Tuesday night. I'm probably going to be so happy in my bed.
Well, look, man, I wish you a ton of luck. I hope it goes the way you guys have been planning for it. You know, I know you're young, but to put all your life's work into it to this point and achieve a dream, almost no one gets to, man. There's just, I always have a lot of respect for you guys for getting to that because you'll always be able to say like, hey, man, you know, this is the deal. And then many things that come after that.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, cool. That was a lot of fun. I got to tell you about the same game parlays on FanDuel Sportsbook. They're pretty simple, and people have been on fire with these right now.
By the way, I hit the last two.
Last two. So this is yours again? All right. I like this. I like how this
is happening.
I'm
taking a shot because I haven't lost yet, so I'm taking a real shot.
I love it. I love it. I have no problem with it. So let's keep rolling. All right. So here we go. Same game parlays, FanDuel Sportsbook, pretty simple. All you have to do is combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. This way, the payouts are even bigger when you win. That's why they're bigger, because it's a little tougher than just picking one thing. You got to pick a couple, but the payouts are worth it. And FanDuel will refund the first same game parlay you lose on any NFL game each week up to $10. That means you can bet a different parlay risk-free. So again, that means if you don't have an account, go to FanDuel Sportsbook, sign up. We're going to give you the promo code and you can pick a same game parlay, $10, you lose. It doesn't cost you anything. You actually are throwing away a chance at free money here. All right. So here's our same game parlay. It's the Kyle special. Raiders at Chargers. Kyle went with Chargers -1.5, the over 51.5, and whoa, you have it as a tie. So you didn't pick a side in the first half money line. You went money line. The game is tied.
Plus 4,000 on that one there. That's perfect for your $10. If this is your $10 bet, like the upside is tremendous.
Tremendous upside. Somebody is walking around with some bigger shorts since this 2-0 start. And I love it. I love it. All right. So with your first NFL same game parlay of the week, again, that's Chargers -1.5 and over 51.5. And then he has it as a tie first half money line, which does has a monster number there. All right. So with your first NFL same game parlay of the week, you'll get $10 back if Kyle or you doesn't win. Now there's one catch. FanDuel is the only sportsbook app that has the same game parlay. So if you don't already have a FanDuel account, just use the promo code RYEN. That's FanDuel Sportsbook. And the promo is RYEN. It's right there on the tabs. You go to the thing. It's going to say same game parlay. Couldn't be easier to find. We went through it super easy. You must be 21 or older and present in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, West Virginia, Indiana, Colorado, Iowa, Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable. Site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Terms apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-9-WITH-IT Indiana. 1-800-GAMBLER New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789 or visit www.1800gambler.net, West Virginia.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari. 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life advice. rr@gmail.com. Sorry we don't get to all these because we're getting quite a few of these thousands a week now. Okay, I'm going to just refrain from almost using anyone's name. Now, because some of you guys have put in too many, you'll say, don't use my name. And then you put in a million details. You're like, this wouldn't be super hard to figure out who this is. So, all right. Freshman in college at a great school. Funny guy, getting in a good shape, but lacking the height category, clocking in at 5'7". Hey, man. I met this girl who's perfect in everything I look for. We got drunk and hooked up one night. Afterwards, I was an idiot. So we got a college freshman on our hands, folks. All right. Afterwards, I was an idiot, got overexcited and confident and told her how I felt. And she said she felt the same way, but, quote, wasn't ready. I guess she didn't really feel the same way. We never talked about it since. We hang out often, most times watching a movie. We cuddle in her clothes during the film. A little spooning, I guess, here is what our man is saying. But I can never make a move. Scared I may misread a situation. So wait, she's coming over to cuddle with you and watch movies the whole time? You're thinking about this too much. All right. I think about her nonstop, almost in an unhealthy way. So you really like her. All right, that's cool, man. It's cool to open up and care. I don't know whether she's into me or not, but then again, who watches a movie with a guy 5 days straight and doesn't like him? Exactly. That's our point. All right. Halloween comes. She proclaims she, quote, likes me while drunk again, but then proceeds to FaceTime her ex. Probably explains why she's not ready for anything serious. We all, with all the mixed signals, what's my next move? I don't want to be the where do we stand guy. It makes things potentially awkward, but I also don't want to be stay up wondering how she feels. I know she's into me, but I don't know where to go from here. All right. Look, at that age, man, I mean, it's a really, really young age. I know you think you're a grown-up and adult and you're 18 and all that kind of stuff, but like you're 2 years removed from hoping to borrow the car if you even have a license. So being at that age, it's a weird age because you really do think you have it all figured out. You're out of the house. You're like, this is awesome. You have access to things you never had access before. And part of that is actually like getting to meet new females all the time. It's like, it's pretty overwhelming, to be honest with you, especially it depends on where you come from. If you come from a place where it shuts down for 8 months of the year, like I did, and you're like, what the hell? Like, why? There's a girl in a towel going to get take a shower in the dorm. Like, what? Am I allowed to be in the hallway right now? All right. So, I you know, a lot of the college relationships, most of these never work out anyway. But you're not going to know this. Like, you care about somebody, you want to spend time with them, you want to know how they feel about you. That's all very normal. But most of these relationships don't go anywhere. So if you could ever do the time machine of like, hey, now I have everything I know and all this knowledge and now I'm 18-year-old freshman again, I wouldn't care about any relationships. I'm not saying never care about anything, but I definitely wouldn't get too worked up about anything because none of it really even matters. Like, you're supposed to have these sort of small, weird friends with benefits. You know, you're all these, like, some of your friends are going to be mature enough and some of the girls are going to, like, I actually feel bad for girls in college because all these guys get there and they freak out and the girls think they're going to meet like this guy that's like long term, and then by the time the girls are sophomores, they figure out all the guys suck And then by the time the girls are seniors, they want nothing to do with you, and you're a senior and you don't want to go out with any senior girls because there's a new crop of girls coming in all the time. And, you know, it's all like friend zoned. And then the girls that are seniors are dating guys that are like art studio dudes who lived off campus years ago because they're so sick of your shit for the last 4 years. So overthinking any relationship in college is a waste of time, but you can't do it until you're older. So I'm asking you to kind of do the impossible. So here's what I would do. I would not at fine, like it's the, hey, I like you, where do we stand thing is a turnoff to her, obviously. And yes, you guys are probably drunk all the time. So just ride it out, man. Just ride with it. Like if she says, hey, I like you, when she's drunk again, just be like, all right, cool. We can hang out or we can not. And it'll probably like blow her mind, you know? Because you'll don't talk like an 18-year-old. Talk like a 28-year-old. Be like, yeah, what's up? I got time. But, you know, I'm not here to play these games. And it would probably totally like, whoa, this guy. Instead of kind of being like weak and, hey, do you like me? Or what's going on? Which is fine because I did the same shit back then. But the worst thing you can do is like freak out about these month-to-month relationships that are fairly short-lived at this age. And with the fact that, you know, she's going to change her mind about you. You're probably going to change her mind about her. And that's why a lot of this stuff is just weird. That's why a lot of people aren't like full-fledged dating somebody in college where it's like, all right, I met my wife sophomore year. Although, you know, it depends on the school too. Like my school was like that, where it was kind of notorious where I think there was some scattering report in Vermont that said, don't expect to meet your future wife or husband here, as like one of the lowest marriage rates of any major university. And, you know, and I was like, all right, have we talked about Arizona State yet? So, you know, each school is different, but I guess the point is I know it's hard, man, at 18 to be like, all right, I'm not going to think this way because you're 18, but I can promise you, if you spend a lot of time and it's unhealthy and you're freaking out about it all the time, there's going to be years removed from you. But like, I can't believe I did that. So the trick is to try to get yourself to get out of that thought process now, even though that's a really hard thing to do. But I just don't worry about it. Who cares if she FaceTimes her ex, whatever. You know what I mean? Like if she doesn't want to date you and she wants to do some of that stuff and you just still want to spend time with her, just go ahead and spend time with her. But don't raise your expectations and don't ask her stuff that freaks her out. Kyle, anything to add to that?
That's a good one. Get in where you fit in, man. And whenever she's got time for you, that's it.
Yeah. It's just, it's a very difficult thing to do and go, hey, 18, but have the mentality of a 30-year-old guy.
It's not worth it being disappointed in college. It's such a short time.
Yeah. Like if I knew what I knew, even at 30 and had that mindset as a freshman and then, you know, sophomore, junior, or whatever, I mean, it would have been, you know, it would have been on like nobody, like you read about, kids, because you just, but I didn't know that stuff back then. I just didn't. So it's the trick of being, you know, when you're older, you wish you're young. And when you're younger, you don't know really how to process a lot of that stuff. So I don't know. It'd be a good science experiment. I think they did that though. With Jamie Lee Curtis and who was it? Lindsay Lohan?
Freaky Friday.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, this one's heavy. I'm giving everybody a warning. All right, here's the deal. I've been a listener since July. I'm your favorite sports personality. Thank you. Okay. Here's my man. He's 26, male. Okay. Thanks for pointing that out. 5'10", but a 5'8" wingspan. I don't know why everybody started doing their stats and everything. It didn't. Shout out to Dan Patrick, who's the OG of this, where they would have callers and just go 5'10", 220. I remember there was one guy who was like 5'8", 330, big Braves fan. And they were like, whoa. And they would hit the little bell. So I don't want anybody to think I'm taking it from him. All right. Athletic, starting to get my man body. All right. Well, how athletic are you? He says he's got like a little Jon Snow, Ricky Rubio deal. All right. That's cool. Midwest, $80,000 a year, analyst, loves his career. Okay, great. Golf, loves basketball, Bucks fan. Cool. There's a major part of my life that I've left out of the above, and that's my wife, which is why I'm writing in. We've been married since August 17, dated my wife steadily since she was 15. Whoa. Okay, that's very early to meet your wife, but it's also, in a way, kind of really cool because, like, that person knows you better than anyone because you became adults together and now you're still together. All right, great. She's an amazing woman, kind, open-hearted, beautiful, ex-athlete, independent, intelligent. I love her. Similar to me, dream job, finding career success. We're very social people, both joint friends and separate friends. My family truly loves her. Family truly loves me. We have two dogs together and discuss having children. Obviously, every partnership has its faults, but we've always stabilized. We both work hard to set up the humbled and balanced life we have. It's been an amazing ride. 18 months ago, my wife had an affair with a woman. Okay. We both knew and respected this woman, as she was my wife's former coworker. This woman was also married and since divorced. When they hung out, went to the bar together, or would text call, I was never threatened. Why should I have been? I don't blame me for not seeing that. My wife was very forthcoming and honest about the relationship and its development once it became a serious thing. She was honest about it once you found out about it. And so our emailer here says he's known about it for 14 months. The biggest challenge for both of us that we've ever faced in our young lives before this, neither of us had an ounce of infidelity in our 11 years together. I have a very liberal view of the world, accepting of you know, he wants everybody to make sure that, like, look, I'm not looking down on it. It's specific to him. His wife cheated on him. Thus, I don't hate my wife, and I do want her in my life. The question is, in what capacity? Wife, lifelong friend. This part has made it complex to navigate, because if it were another man, I'm not sure I'd even be writing in. Additionally, my wife doesn't know how she would define her sexuality anymore, and it's conflicting wants, needs on future relationships. As you can imagine, I never would have thought this would happen to us. A lot of the emotions, conversations, and feelings don't translate well. The writing, reading, I'll articulate it. He said he's tried to send in previous emails. It's too long. I'll skip giving you the TikTok, my last 14 months. Generally, you have to know is this. One day, I think we can erase it and fight for our marriage. The next day, I have 18 holes with the boys and say, fuck it, hitting reset on the romantic part of my life, proving to everyone I'm happy with myself and for her. The next day, I feel it's disconnecting, but still very happy with our new futures. Next day, I miss her and I don't care what happened. I want her back. The next day, I see how happy her new intimate relationship makes her, and I'm sad. So is she still with her? It sounds like she is. All right, so we're content in this weird arrangement. We both acknowledge it. The pandemic hasn't helped in our decision-making process. I've decided to get unstuck. I'm planning to move out. I believe physical distancing and removing from the daily emotion reliance will help clarify our needs separately. I'm not sure what to emotionally expect. The step, I've spent the last 14 months becoming more complacent with my situation because our lives are comfortable and generally still good and everything except our direct relationship. Not sure how long, but frankly, we need to shake it up and start taking some action steps. Throughout all of this, I still had a love for her. Oh, wait a minute. Throughout all of this, I still have a lot of love for the life that I'm privileged to live. So that's pretty impressive, man. You're sitting here and you're not doing a complete woe is me, even though this has turned your life upside down and you're feeling good about all the things that you have in your life that are positive. And it sounds like you have a lot of positive things. So he asked me a couple of things here at the end. Maybe I'll get to it. But all right, this is tough. This is a haymaker. And I'm sure there's some of you listening now, and I'm sure maybe me in my 20s, I'm like, whoa, dude, that's awesome. All right. And let's stay away from that, because it isn't awesome. You feel like, whether it's a male or a female, your wife cheated on you and you feel betrayed. Like, there's a trust level there. And without being entirely immature about it, it's clear it doesn't mean anything. It may be processed differently, but it still is a betrayal because you're in a marriage here and she was going behind your back and extending some sort of emotional relationship that it clearly became physical, which appears is still the case. So I'll admit too, you know, full transparency. If I always think, like, if my wife cheated on me, if she cheated on me with another woman, I know I would just process it differently. I don't know that I would like it. It would be different, because if it were a guy and it were a guy that I knew, I'm actually scared of what I would do. I am. I'm scared to death of what I would do, but it would also depend on, well, we're already going through a really bad year and you already saw all the signs and you knew something bad was going to happen. And, you know, you probably both going your separate ways in a marriage, then maybe I would process a little differently. If I were completely blindsided and it's like, oh, hey, by the way, I've been sleeping with Kyle, you know, it would probably not be the best day I've ever had. So, you know, the fact that you got married so young, there may be this thing inside of her that, you know, when you mentioned her sexuality and everything, that may be just really hard for her to process. Like, she never had time away from not having you in her life during a very early time. And that part probably makes it a little different for her understanding what she wants. Like, if she wants to not be with you, then we already know that you're done here. You having every day go by and all of your emotions change, that's really normal. That's totally normal. I'd say I'd have two bad breakups in my life. And one of them, I remember, like, a few months removed from it, I was still pretty upset about it. And then I had, like, this day where I didn't think about her, and I was so proud of it for that day. I was like, man, this is really great. You're turning a corner, and you're turning a corner really quickly. It's only been a couple months. Like, you're going to be good to go. And then I think it lasted, like, two more years, maybe longer. So the day-to-day part of it, spending all this time thinking about it, is going to drive you crazy. And I could sit here and say, hey, stop doing that. But that's stupid. It's completely arrogant of anybody to tell you, hey, stop thinking this way, when every day you have all these different emotions because you miss that person. You miss your best friend. You miss this person you've known since you were 15. You miss this person you built this life with and have been together with a really, really long time. And then you didn't even see this coming. Then all of a sudden now she's dating another woman. So even if it weren't about another woman, or it's it's, I know that becomes this part of the story that is distracting, but I think the processing of it is still the same if it were another man. Like, maybe that would make you more mad. I don't know that makes you a worse person or whatever. I'm trying to avoid all that stuff. What I'm saying is, you need to figure out quickly, and you said you've seen the therapist, which I hope you would talk to before me. You need to figure out really quickly if she ever sees you back in her life in a romantic sense, because if she's telling you no, then you got to turn the page. And honestly, with this thing, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, if she's not attracted to you and she's attracted now to the same, like, what are you going to do about that? It's happened to a couple friends of mine. It has. And I have some friends, women that only like other women, and, you know, we'll talk because we're friends and we're close. And I'll say, hey, you know, like, let's talk about it a little bit. And I'll hear about this female connection of the female in a relationship with another female, where that connection is like beyond, where for men, I think it's harder for us to understand that are straight men, where you'd go, hey, I like fantasy football. And then I like fantasy football. I'd be like, hey, do you want to go and hit some balls tomorrow? Yes. And then next Thursday, it's like, do you want to date? And I think we have a hard time going, wait a minute, what? Where I think because of our disconnect, both male and female, and we just don't think the same way. We don't process things the same way. I think it's very fair to say that, that there's an emotional support that men wouldn't have for each other. Maybe it's a harder thing for men to understand the emotional support side of it, because we're very kind of closed off as compared to more open, where women that I've talked to that date only other women, they're like, look, there's a connection there that you guys just don't understand. I'm like, all right, cool. So I don't know if you're ever going to be able to compete with that. Seriously. So you got to figure that part of it first. Now, if you think there's a chance that she's going to want to get back together with you, are you always going to worry about it? Because then you're putting yourself through an entirely different hell. Now, if you want to give it a shot, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. But you got to figure out if she's even interested in you again as a partner. And if it's a no, then what are you doing? You know, I mean, I know you're still going to be bummed out, but, you know, there are some games that you can win, and then there are some where you already know you have no chance. So let's put it that way. All right. So he's asking me, with my brush with potential marriage around the same age, now that you've had some distance, do you think it would have been happy in that situation? Would have went differently if she perceived you as more stable? What are you fucking saying, dude? Let me just answer. I'm not going to go through all of this stuff. I'm just going to say, whoever married me in my 20s, I would 100% be divorced from. No question. Because I made up my mind very early on, get out of my way. I'm doing all this stuff. And the idea that another person would have stuck, you know, there's no way anybody would have stuck it out with me, because I would have not given them enough at that time. All right. So here we go. Question number two, very comfortable being alone, but it doesn't necessarily correlate to me being lonely. That being said, I want to take a solo road trip to clear my head. I won't come back with the answers to life. A little male eat, pray, love here. Like it. Okay. But I think it will accelerate making decisions. It's 10 or 15 days before Thanksgiving. I'll be working remotely half the time, but I don't plan on telling anyone, including my wife, until I'm heading out the door. I think I'm heading south. Nashville, New Orleans, Austin. I wouldn't go to New Orleans feeling like this. I just wouldn't. dangerous combo. Somewhere warmer so I can get off. Any suggestions from a man who's taken solo trips? Yeah, look, I mean, I almost think you should try to find if there's a buddy that wants to go with you on this one, because I just go solo because I go solo. And granted, you know, when I call up a buddy, be like, hey, could you go to the Amalfi Coast next month? Be like, yeah, totally. Let me ask my wife if I can go to the Amalfi Coast with you in 3 weeks for 9 days, just you and I. Do you want the answer now, or do you want me to call you back later today? I would see if you can find a guy that can go with you that maybe can work remotely too, that you're really close with, instead of just being by yourself the whole time, because you're going through a challenge you've never gone through here. And if you've never done that big solo road trip, you know, maybe it's the right thing for you. Maybe it isn't. Or maybe you can go somewhere where you do a couple stops and you stop it and see some buddies along the way, so you're not completely by yourself the whole time. Because I still don't think, even though I'm a solo guy all the time, I don't think it's the best thing to always be by yourself. All right. So, I guess there's only part of this, Kyle, that I keep getting back to. I can't figure out if they're still trying to work this out. You know what I'm saying? So this is a tough one. You feel betrayed. You know, something went on behind your back for over a year. And yes, it was your wife and another woman. So I guess, you know, we put it in a different category, but
you still stick to your stomach about it.
Yeah, we still, it doesn't, you know, it can be in a different category. And at the same time, it isn't in a different category. So your world's gotten turned upside down. And I'll tell you, like, it kind of happens, not this specifically, but look, one of my best friends, he was ready to be engaged, may have actually been engaged just a long time ago. And then all of a sudden she came back. She's like, look, I'm dating a girl and I don't want to marry you. And for some guys, it's like, all right, cool. Like, what am I supposed to do? What it for some guys, it's actually easier to process that. And you're like, all right, okay. Like, what am I supposed to do about that one? As opposed to, I left you for the electrician. So I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry about that. But I would say the trip is a good idea, but don't be, if you haven't done solo trips before, which it sounds like you probably haven't because you've known your wife since you were 15, find at least solo with destinations to maybe, you know, run into some people. So there you go. Please subscribe, rate, and review Ryan Russillo Podcast, the Ringer Podcast Network. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back with our football Monday. And we're already booked up for next week, too. An incredible author, one of the best writers of our times, is going to join us. A new book that's coming out. I'm not going to tell you his name yet. And maybe I'll tease it on Monday. But I'm pretty excited about his book. Incredible topic. And again, one of the best writers going. So everybody have a great weekend again.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the golden collection at UGG.com.